Okay, members.
First, the only one.
I'm going to call this House Education Policy Committee meeting to order. Please take your seats. And let's see here. I have the minutes of Friday, March 1st in front of us. Has anybody had a chance to take a look at them? Our Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes February 25th.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt moves moves the minutes for Friday, March 1st.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I see a technical correction, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kalpar. So on the top, we'll have a technical correction to change it to Monday, March 5th, 1st, instead of February 25th.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I also have a correction on the second page. Under House File 1204, priors, you have Representative Mueller moving 491.
Yep, that is a cut and paste error, I believe. And we will change that as well. Thank you so much, Representative Erickson, for catching that. Any other discussion on the motion to move the Friday, March 1st minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The minutes have been approved. Now, let's get the show on the road. We have Representative Fu Lee ready and waiting to bring up House File 1116. All right. I'll move House File 1116 before the committee. It's my intention to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Erickson.
I'd like to raise an objection based on the title, in that the title of this bill says making technical changes, and this is indeed not a technical bill. When you look at the substance of this bill, this is moving or making a substantive change to move community ed teachers to the continuing contract, the right to tenure, and the privilege of seniority. So if you're not going to change the title so that the public knows exactly what this bill is about, I think we're doing a great disservice to the people who want to know what's going on here at the legislature. So I would hope that you're going to change the title of this bill. Otherwise, I'll do a point of order.
Okay, Representative Erickson, do you have a suggestion on what we should call it then?
Well, you could clarify what you should be doing to this licensure requirement for ABE and ECFE.
All right, Representative Erickson, I'm going to turn to nonpartisan staff and see what a suggestion would be.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I'm not sure there's a way to change the title if the bill is staying in this committee. If it were to be referred out, then I think it could be amended. But since it's being laid over, I just don't know that there's a way to do it.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Pera, is there no way to get the reviser to make the change so that the bill is posted correctly?
Ms. Pera?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know if there is.
Representative Erickson, I'm wondering, Ms. Pera, is there a way to do an oral amendment here? But then you're saying it wouldn't be engrossed because we're not moving it out of the committee.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Madam Chair, I'll have a word with the reviser and see what could be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Lee, would you like to state your name for the record now that the bill's before us and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee from District 59A. And committee members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1116. This is a bill regarding early childhood family educators and adult basic educators, and is proposed to address the inequities that our early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers face. These educators are required to be fully licensed, but they do not have access to the same protections as traditional K-12 teachers. The change fixes this inequity and changes the law so that these invaluable ECFE and ABE educators are covered under the Continuing Contract Law and Teacher Tenure Act. So what does this mean? These employees will get more predictable notice, planned layoffs, and will be entitled to due process upon proposed termination that all other teachers currently receive. It also enables them to participate in the full complement of activities under the Teacher Development and Evaluation Law. It will not change the current negotiated benefits, scheduling practices, or the individual entitlement to full or part-time position, which were the chief concerns raised by the districts. Additionally, under the new tier licensing system definitions, these teachers are recognized as fully licensed teachers as their K-12 peers. The most important outcome of this proposal be that these teachers will know that they are respected as the professional that they are. It is time to make sure that these educators are on the same playing field as their peers. And Madam Chair, before I turn it over to my testifier, this is really important for me as we have these discussions around, you know, how do we close the achievement gap, the opportunity gap we have here in the state of Minnesota. We really need to, you know, pay the respect that our teachers who are at the front line, who are, you know, working with our earliest learner, and, you know, really help them be able to provide them the opportunity to, you know, really get out there and work with our families. And so I think that providing this for our teachers are really great for the work that they do for our communities. And I just want to turn it over to my two testifiers.
Thank you. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, whoever would like to go first?
My name is Kimberly Antonson.
Hey, go ahead, Ms. Antonson.
Antonson.
Antonson. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Kimberly Antonson. I have a birth to sixth grade teaching license and a master's in early childhood education. I've been a licensed early childhood family education teacher for 19 years. In those years, I have taught early childhood in the Detroit Lakes, Menomon, and currently the Waubenogama-Wider School Districts. I'm currently a member of the Governor's Early Learning Council, a member of Education Minnesota's Professional Advocacy Committee, and was just elected to the Frazee-Vergus School Board. I was also the chairperson of Education Minnesota's ECFE ABE Task Force. My first degree was in elementary education. After a long-term subbing position in early childhood, I fell in love with teaching our youngest learners and made the decision to go back to school and get my early childhood license so I could make this my profession. Who wouldn't love spending their day with children, playing with Play-Doh, building castles with blocks, and reading all the books you could want? The work I do and the play that they are engaged in is fundamental to their brain development and preparing them for elementary school. I am fortunate that in Ogama, the early childhood teachers have been treated equally the same as their colleagues and given almost all the same benefits for the last 20 years. Even that long ago, the district knew that in order to get a quality teacher in the position, they needed to offer all the benefits they could. By doing this, they have shown respect for early childhood and the teachers that love their profession. The only thing we cannot get is a continuing contract, which would put us on the same seniority list as the rest of the certified staff. This would give us the same job security as our peers. It would send the message that the legislature values our work as highly as all teachers. Currently, our seniority list at Ogama is 3 people. I've been told by members of my school board and my administration that they support this bill being passed. I would also like to thank Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward, and also thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me time to speak today. If you need any further discussion, I'm always available.
Thank you, Ms. Antonson. Could you please state your name for the record?
My name is Heather Turngren.
Heather Turngren?
Turngren.
Turngren, thank you very much. Go ahead, proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak at this committee hearing today. My name is Heather Turngren. I live and work in Minneapolis. I am a fully licensed adult basic education teacher, and I have had to follow the same licensing requirements as my K-12 colleagues. I also still follow the same re-licensure requirements as the K-12 teachers do to maintain my credentials and my teaching license. I have been an adult basic education, or ABE, teacher for 19 years with Minneapolis Adult Education in Minneapolis Public Schools. In Minneapolis adult education, which is similar to many other ABE programs across the state of Minnesota, we serve adult students. We serve English language learners with ESL classes, and we also serve native English-speaking students who maybe need to brush up on their basic skills, look for GED or adult diploma classes, and college preparation classes. As you may already know, many of the students you find in ABE classrooms throughout the state represent Minnesota's communities of color. ABE is a great way to help Minnesota close the education gap and allow for adult students of all ages to achieve the education they may not have been able to obtain earlier. I feel lucky to have been able to teach classes at almost every level of ABE in my 19 years with Minneapolis Adult Education, ranging from pre-literacy to college prep, and in almost every ABE subject or content area. I have taught reading, writing, math, social studies, science, ESL, and career pathways. I have also taught classes in the morning, the afternoon, the evening, and on Saturdays. I know that I am not alone in being a flexible ABE teacher. My focus has always been on meeting the needs of the adult students in my classroom. This bill will not alter that focus at all. This bill before you will allow ABE teachers and ECFE teachers to have the equity with our K-12 colleagues. This bill would correct the inequity and will allow all licensed teachers in the state of Minnesota to have equity and portability and show us the respect that our profession deserves. I'm asking all of you to please support this bill. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this forward, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing us to testify this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Turngren. Any further words, Representative Lee? Otherwise, I'm going to open it up for see if there's anybody in the audience. Is there anybody in the audience that signed up to testify? I believe there is. So, sorry, I should have called you down right away. I have it on my list. We have Ms. Dietrich and Mr. Amoroso. And then we'll just move to member questions. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we greatly appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on House File 1116. The school boards across Minnesota have some concerns with this bill. We feel like it does much more than make technical changes to the statute, MS-1228.26. The bill would have significant budgeting and programmatic impacts on community education and early education, early childhood family education, or ECFE. By dividing Subdivision 2, the early childhood family education teachers and adult basic education teachers would now be subject to the continuing contract provisions. Our concerns, however, stems from the fact that these programs do not have compulsory attendance requirements, which leads to unpredictable enrollment. Without the flexibility that the current statute provides to adjust teaching loads, school districts will be hiring ECFE teachers for the entire school year, regardless of enrollment, and this would most likely increase costs to the school district. Another point to be made is that ECFE students do not generate pupil units for funding purposes as K-12 students do. Thus, the ECFE and adult basic education students do not bring funding to pay for benefits and pay for the teachers who work a certain number of duty days as K-12 staff do. This change would have contractual, finance, and programmatic change impacts that would limit the ability for school board members to efficiently and effectively deliver the valuable opportunities for our adult learners and our youngest students in our school districts. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Much of what Ms. Dietrich just shared are also the concerns we have. I'd just like to put a couple of examples off for your consideration. But also like to say that this in no way is a conversation about not valuing our ECF teachers, our community of teachers. That is not the point. The point is, if we're going to have the conversation, we ask you to consider that there are potential fiscal impacts and potentially impacts on the other members of our system, our other teachers. By example, if all of these staff were to be involved with the seniority process, districts would have an option and an opportunity that they would have to abide by as you get to the spring of the year when you're doing your budgeting. If you're not sure how many kids are going to be coming into your system in the early childhood program, you're going to do one of two things. Either you're going to protect the financial aspect of the system and probably issue more layoff notices because you're not sure of how many people you're going to have coming in. And if you issue more layoff notices and it's all done by seniority, you're not only going to be potentially impacting the teachers within these programs, but if it's in the seniority list for the entire district and they are multi and they have more than one license, they then have an opportunity to bump someone else out of their current position, and they could be shifted into that position because of how seniority works. So that's something I think that I would at least like you to consider, that this potentially not only has an impact on the staff members that we're talking about, but could have an impact on all of the staff members that we work with within our districts. Secondly, as Ms. Dietrich said, I think you need to consider the fact that there could be a financial impact. And one of the things we've heard as we've seen the governor's budget come out and as I've heard conversations in the House is that whatever resources are provided to the districts this year in terms of the general funding formula, we want those resources to go into the classroom. We agree with that 100%. Something of this nature could cause unintended increases in costs, which would actually then take some of the resources that currently are being envisioned for the entire program, and maybe we'd have to shift some of those costs. That's a possibility. That's not a given, but it is a possibility. So I just ask you, as you're having the conversation about this bill, that you look at the potential, and there may be unintended consequences, but yet consequences of this passing. With that, I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify for or against this bill? I don't see anyone. And I think I'll go to member questions. Members, Representative Kunesh-Budin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Mr. Amoroso. Madam Chair and Mr. Amoroso, can you tell us where the funding for ECFE comes from? How do you budget that account?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that comes out of our community education funding programs.
Representative Kunesh-Budin.
By the number of the students that come into the programs.
Representative Kunesh-Budin, follow up?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Amoroso, can you give us sort of a historical overview of enrollment in ECFE? Is it going up? Is it going down? Have there been really incredible, significant fluxes in enrollment that would cause you concern?
Mr. Amoroso?
I don't have that data. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have that data, Representative. I was trying to share thoughts on what possibilities could be, and we're dealing with 331 districts that may not have the same history as other districts.
Representative Kunesh-Budin, follow-up? Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one more question. You know, I'm a teacher, and I know what it's like every fall, or every spring when our district is looking at the expectations for the next year, and teachers are laid off, whether they're ECFE or a classroom teacher or a specialist along the way. And I know that when you were talking about that licensure, where if somebody has a dual licensure, teachers are able to remove that ECFE licensure if they so choose not to go in there. So if there is a teacher such as myself, a library media specialist, and I hold an ECFE licensure, I can actually remove that, put it aside so that I'm not in that pool. And so when you're talking about perhaps all of these teachers that might be able to bump another teacher, I think that's something that we should understand. It doesn't automatically happen. The next person in seniority goes on. But I also wanted to make a point that when you talk about how you're never sure what the enrollment's going to be for the next year for ECFE, we don't know that in our school districts either. We can sort of think of ahead and say, well, this is what's been thought would be our enrollment, and then in the fall it might be even less or it might be even more. So that's nothing new. That's something that school districts deal with across the board when it comes to anticipating the next school next school year enrollment. And so something like that is just a task of doing business in the education world in the school districts. And so I think that's something that maybe isn't really as problematic as you make it out to be, because that's what schools do in every way.
Representative Grunhagen, then I also
have Madam Chair, may I respond to that?
Of course, I'm so sorry, Mr. Amoroso. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What Representative says is true. There are no givens, but I will share in 15 years as superintendent, our projections for our what I'll call the K-12 programs were pretty spot on. We bring professionals in. We do historical work. And we get those projections. Are they exact? You're absolutely correct. They are not exact, but they're pretty spot on. And when we have questions, we would usually be conservative, and that would cause us to have to do the layoff piece. And I hear what you're saying. The worst part of my budgeting process as a superintendent was having to notify people that they were being issued a layoff notice. That's not something anybody enjoys doing, but you're also responsible when you're the superintendent and the board of making sure that you're protecting the district financially as best you can for things that happen. And so while we're not perfect at it, I think we were pretty good with K-12, and I don't think when you're talking about the early childhood programs, we had that kind of data, and maybe we didn't do a good job with it, but we did not have that kind of data for the early childhood programs.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I, you know, when I was on the school board, the 6 years I was chief negotiator for both the certified staff and ECFE, and I do support keeping them separate for the reasons that were shared by the MSBA testifier and also the administration. It just worked good, and, you know, there is some cost shifting by including it in there, and it's always a struggle to meet your commitments at the K-12 level. And so I would encourage this bill to be opposed, because I think the current system works well under the current formula, and I won't repeat the comments they made, but I agree with them. Pretty much 100%. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Erickson, you're on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee, do ABE and ECFE have the right to collectively bargain like the K-12 system?
Representative Lee.
Madam Chair, I have professionals here that could actually answer that question better than I am.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Meg Luger-Nikolai. I'm an attorney with Education Minnesota. And thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. They are in the same bargaining unit as K-12 teachers.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Nikolai. Thank you. Representative Erickson, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Perry, I know Mr. Strom's not here, but could you explain to the committee how community ed is funded? Or do we have to wait for Mr. Strom to return? Because it's aid and levy, and it's a little complicated, but a fund transfer would have to be made if these costs are going to be covered, if there's a continuing contract, I would suspect. So can you comment any at all, or should we wait for Mr. Strom?
Ms. Perry.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think we should wait for Mr. Strom.
We can come back to you. Representative Baker.
I think... Madam Chair, I think Representative Erickson kind of tried to ask it. I was going to ask kind of the same direction. Maybe I can wait for Mr. Stromba as well to attend a question on funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask a question to Mr.
Amarasa?
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and ask the question as he's coming on down?
I was just going to ask, when we talk about ECFE education, we're talking about kids that are like 3 and 4 year olds, mm-hmm. right?
Mr. Amarasa?
Yes.
And Madam Chair,
Representative
Amarasa, these are the most critical years for our children. This is, if we have to invest in education, this is where it starts. And if your parent is not does not have the resources and the funds to invest in your education in these early years, then you already start kindergarten behind, correct?
Mr. Amarasa?
Mr. Strong.
I'm not an expert in the area, but I would agree. And I'd also share that I said early in my comments that this is not a conversation from our perspective about the value of our staff or our programs. What I was trying to do and what I will continue to do is just ask you to consider the fiscal impacts and the actual impacts of implementation when it comes to seniority of these processes. I in no way, shape, manner, or form have said anything negatively and would never say anything negatively about programming for our youngest learners or our staff. That was not what we talked about.
Thank you, Mr. Amarasa.
Madam Chair,
one more follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Amarasa, when we put dollars on kids' future, then we are talking about value. So for me sitting here listening to someone testify that they have concerns about, you know, having the same contract as teachers who teach ECFE and teachers who teach K through 12, for me that is a value. Somebody is putting a value on which education is more important and which kids should get more education. So I'm very disappointed, and I'm sorry that I don't agree with you. This is the most critical age for kids. Their brain is growing, and we need to invest more money, if nothing else, in this part of education. And we know that we have the worst opportunity gap in the whole nation, so we shouldn't even be having this conversation. Thank you.
Mr. Amarasa, while you're up here, I have a quick question, too, just to clarify what's, so I can remember right. Are ECSE teachers underneath, are not included in this? They're included in the K through 12 teacher contract?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure.
I'm seeing nodding heads, so if somebody could come up and answer my question, that would be.
Madam Chair, could I also make a response?
Oh, yes.
I was.
Mr. Amarasa, go ahead. I want to make a quick response to Ms. Hassan, and then part of my other question, too, is those aren't required enrollees either, so ECSE, that is. So we'll follow that up. So one quick response to Ms.
Very
Hassan.
Very quick,
we don't
Madam Chair.
Go like a tennis match here today.
No, I don't want it to be a tennis match, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
If we're talking about policy, that's one thing, and you are correct, ma'am, that when we talk about resources, that's another point. And all I would ask to consider is that if we're talking about resources, then the conversation be about resources, and we talk about are we going to increase the resources to the school districts, or the school districts going to have to take the resources out of existing funds. But if it's out of existing funds, I don't believe that's in the best interest of any of our children in our school systems.
Thank you. Mr. Amarasa. And Ms. Luger, Nikolai, could you please restate your name for the record? And my question was, are ECSE teachers considered contract and continuing contract employees like K through 12?
Meg Luger-Nikolai, Education Minnesota, and Madam Chair, they are continuing contract teachers under 122A.40 and tenured under 122A.41.
Thank you, Ms. Nikolai. And maybe this question would be to, now that we have our money man here, Mr. Strom. The aid and funding, does that, and then we have a question from Ms. Representative Baker and Representative Erickson about the funding as well. So, sorry, I just have not had enough coffee today. Mr. Strom, with ECSE, how is that funding stream work? Is that also through continuing ed? Is that a per pupil formula?
Madam Chair, members, the early childhood special education is funded through the general fund. There are some federal dollars that assist with that, but primarily it's funded through the general fund.
Is it funded on a per pupil basis, or is it just a straight appropriation.
Madam Chair, members, the student's time in assessment and for services counts as pupil unit hours, and then the child also generates special education funding.
All right.
So both of those apply for the hours of service.
Thank you so much. And then Representative Erickson or Representative Baker, would you like to restate your question for Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair and Mr. Strom, would you explain to the committee and a review for some of us how community education is funded?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, school districts are required to keep their revenue according to fund. There's the general fund, which pays for things like regular instruction, special education. All of the community education programs are in what's called Fund 4, the Community Service Fund. So ECFE, school readiness, community education itself are all in Fund 4. The legislature has put reserves on the revenue in Fund 4 and on the specific accounts. So money cannot, without legislation, be transferred out of Fund 4 to the general fund. It can't be transferred from the community fund out, but it can be transferred, funds can be transferred from the undesignated general fund balance into the community service fund.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, does that answer your question?
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, would you talk about aid and levy as far as it plays into this?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, there are a couple of primary formulas in the community education area. The largest of those is the ECFE fund currently. That's a mix of aid and levy. The community education revenue is almost entirely through the local levy and is supplemented fairly substantially in most districts by fees for services. So community ed is fees for services. ECFE is a mix of aid and levy. School readiness is currently an all aid program.
Representative Erickson, any more follow-up? Representative Baker, did you have any further questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, to Mr. Strom. Again, new guy on the committee. So you're talking about levies and different things. I kind of know numbers with a per pupil student on average in K-12 was give or take $9,500. Is there a number like that for the ECFE or the adult basic education that I can kind of compare to? Is there a general number per pupil that relates to that?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, we could add up the total revenue in that fund and divide it by the pupil count. The funding formulas are each a little different in the community education area. So the ECFE formula is based on the number of kids age 0 to 5. The community education formula is actually based on the per capita population, all of the residents of the school district, not just school children. The ABE formula is about a five-step formula that's primarily based on the hours of service provided to adult learners. So each of those are different, but we'd be glad to, I can look up the total revenue in that fund and divide by a pupil count and give you a relative amount if that would be helpful to you.
And just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. And I've been in these classrooms before, the early childhood and the adult basic. The teachers are awesome, and they do a great job teaching. For example, in Wilmer, Somali Americans are learning how to speak English. It's an amazing adult education, the GED classes. How many hours do they work compared to, again, our K-12 teachers? Are they about the same, or are they usually less? I think I'm hearing there's a variance there, or they're different. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, I don't know on the hours. The witness may know. I am not aware of what the contract differences look like for ECFE or adult basic teachers compared to those of regular classroom teachers.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Thank you, Mr. Strom. I've got Representative Erdahl, Wislawick, and then Christensen, and I think we're going to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. First of all, ECFE, adult education, very, very important programs in our school systems. And I just want to clarify that I don't think that there's any intent to make any reductions in funding to any of that. I expect there will be probably additional funding as we go through this session for ECFE. What we are talking about is, again, not reducing funding, but about basically... Locally negotiated contracts and its impact on continuing education.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Wislawick. Wazlowick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if Representative Lee or your testifier there could talk a little bit about, I know that these folks are included in local collective bargaining agreements, but can you talk a little bit about what they don't, what they're not a piece of, I guess, just to clarify, like, what sort of things would this help them have access to?
Ms. Nicola?
Yep. Madam Chair and Representative, so they are currently in the collective bargaining agreement. They can negotiate certain terms and conditions of employment, including their compensation with other teachers. What they don't have is the right to a predictable layoff schedule. So at this point, those teachers could be let go with very little notice in the middle of the school year. That isn't true for our other K-12 teachers. And so in terms of the predictability of their scheduling and their ability to continue to work, that is what this bill would fix.
Representative Wazlowick, follow-up. Thank you, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Amoroso.
Why don't you ask it as he comes on down?
I'm just wondering, you talked about the uncertainty for school districts in terms of how many pupils will be attending, and I'm a teacher also, so, you know, I know you know, what all that is about, and there is uncertainty. But isn't it possible for us to find and provide data as to who will be, you know, what ECFE students will be attending the district? Can't we use the same experts to help us provide that data on incoming pupils?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Districts, a lot of districts do census counts and those types of things. They're not as accurate at times, I've been told. But yes, districts could do that. That would be a possibility.
Representative Christensen, follow up?
Okay, no, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more questions, Representative Lee, do you have the final word?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present House File 1116. I just want to note that the effective date for this bill is for this 2020 to 2021 school year, and so there is still time for us to have the discussion around some of the issues that were brought forth today. So, Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you and the committee members for this opportunity to present this House File 1116.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And I move House File 1116 over for possible inclusion. Now I'm going to move the testimony over to, or the gavel over to Representative Kunesh-Badin to present my two bills.
Members, we have House File 1559 up for consideration today. I will preside while Chair Yao-Kim moves to the testifier table to present her bill. And Chair Yao-Kim, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you, Chair, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 1559 before committee today for consideration, and then on to Ways and Means, where it'll head to Education Finance.
So moved. We have the bill before us. Chair Yao-Kim, what is your intent for this bill?
Thank you. My intent is to have it moved to Ways and Means after we discuss it here. So as an educational support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. House File 1559 requires that education support professionals, ESPs also known as paraprofessionals, are given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill has an appropriation to pay for this, and I've asked for a fiscal note. That will be worked out as it moves along. And there's also a requirement that ESPs who work with individual students with disabilities be given paid time to review a student's IEP and time to consider and collaborate with the student, with the teacher about the student. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools. Many of the training, this bill would just allow not only to make sure the training's happening everywhere, but also to make sure that the schools have the funding to do it. During this session, our committee has heard from teachers, parents, administrators, and school board members on how important trained and qualified support specialists are for our schools and for our students. We've heard the importance of trauma training for our students with high ACEs scores, of crisis intervention and restorative practices for our children that are in crisis, and for increasing need for mental health training among all of our school staff. As an ESP, I was in a level 3 EBD and LD program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park, and I still miss the kids. I just left them on December 21st. I've personally seen how effective training can be. In particular, I had some trauma training that was provided from Education Minnesota, and it immediately enabled me to connect and impact my students that have high ACEs scores that I was working with. And, you know, but the four-hour training that was available wasn't even nearly scratched the surface. And due to school budgets, I was not able to attend a refresher in CPI training, which is crisis nonviolent crisis prevention intervention training that helped me say that a bunch of times fast. That helped me dramatically when I was at working at Hopkins High School as a para. So I also started 2 weeks into the school year when I started at Aquila, because they're always scrambling for staff, as we all know. We run very short in these programs. And there was about 5.5 hours of a training module to view online that I had to do on my own, which I was happy to do. But if I would have been able to do it with the rest of my colleagues prior to the school year, when the time allotted, we would have had a lot more time to collaborate. So I know that many districts, you know, St. Louis Park's not alone. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford for training versus what their ESPs need to be trained to be a really good functioning team that could do so much more to serve our students. So while this is my story, I know that it's not a unique one, and I would like to turn the rest of my testimony over to Sarah Washington, who is a Title I Math ESP at Northview Middle School, and Michelle Denard, who is an ESP at Osseo Secondary Transition Center. I also have a Melina Mahabir, a parent of a child with disabilities that's part of PACER, that would like to say a few words. And there is a letter in your packets regarding PACER's support of this bill as well. So I will turn it over to the lovely lady on my right here.
Welcome to the committee. Would you please state your name, and you may begin your testimony.
My name is Sierra Washington. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. As stated before, my name is Sierra Washington. I am a Title I Math Education Support Professional at Northview Middle School in the Osseo Area School District 279. I have worked as an ESP in the Osseo Area School District as a Title I ESP and a hall monitor for the past few years. I went into education because I wanted to make a difference in students' lives. It is essential for ESPs to have the necessary training prior to beginning to work with students. However, oftentimes we are working with students right away with our only training being on the job. While this, of course, can be stressful for us as an ESP, more importantly, it impacts the students. Our positions require us to be versatile to meet students' needs. As a hall monitor, it would have been helpful to receive training such as conflict resolution, trauma information, instruction, etc. Having this training would better prepare us to meet students where they are at. As a classroom ESP, it would have been helpful to receive training specific to the individual student's needs, such as behavior management and collaborative time with the teachers, etc. Again, not only will this help us be the best prepared to help our students, it would also give us the confidence we need to do the best job that we can. I ask you to please support this bill for all of the reasons I stated, to help my colleagues and I be the best trained that we can be, all for the purpose of helping our students succeed. Thank you, Representative Joaquin, for authoring this bill, and thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Washington. Next testifier, please. Would you identify yourself and share what you have to say?
My name is Michelle Denard. Good morning, Madam Chair. Committee members, my name is Michelle Denard. I am a special education paraprofessional in the ICO School District. I have worked in the Osseo area schools for 14 years. I love my job, and I want to help all students. I work with students with special needs in a transition program ages 18 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders and learning difficulties, fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses, etc. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support all students. It's important that all students' needs are met, no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses a wheelchair. As a special education paraprofessional, we are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student's needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for support and goals. Without time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. We might also get a student whose behavior escalates suddenly. We need to know the triggers that causes the student to escalate and what to do to help the student calm down or de-escalate. Teaming up with the teachers or case managers to learn techniques will help us greatly. Most importantly, it will help the student to be successful. Right now, we are not given this essential time to collaborate with the teachers at all. On behalf of all Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you, Representative Joaquin, and thank you, committee.
Thank you, Ms. Denard. Did you say there's one more testifier?
I believe I have, Ms. Mahavir, and I'm probably saying your name wrong. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead and call the chair open?
My name is Melina Mohavir. Madam Chair and representatives of the House Committee on Education, thank you for this opportunity to discuss House Bill 1559 with you today, which will provide clear training requirements for special education support staff. I am the parent of an adult child and a teenager with disabilities. 3 years ago, I joined my school district special education advisory council, and for a little more than 2 years, I've worked as a parent advocate at Pacer Center, specializing in children's mental health and emotional or behavioral disorders. Last summer, I was also honored to accept an appointment at the state special education advisory panel. I also happen to be the daughter of a retired special education teacher. And because of that, I've been surrounded by people who have dedicated themselves to educating children and young adults. All of these roles, personal and professional, have given me the opportunity to speak to and work closely with parents who have children with disabilities, as well as educators and other professionals who work with special needs children and youth across the state of Minnesota. What I know from these conversations is that paraprofessionals play an extremely important role in the education of students with disabilities. Paras not only provide academic support, but they're often tasked with helping a child to regulate their emotions and use appropriate and expected behaviors at school. Their support can have a tremendous impact on the success of a child at school. Pacer Center and the Coalition for Children with Disabilities supported legislation in Minnesota, which is now law, that requires paraprofessionals to be trained in the specific disability of students they work with and provide them paid hours for that training. Passing this law was an important step towards securing quality support for children with disabilities. The bill now being considered would ensure that paras will be given paid time to review the IEP for the students they work with and time to confer with teachers about their students' educational plan. This would be another significant step towards ensuring a high-quality education for our children and youth with disabilities across the state. I often tell parents I work with that learning special education is like learning a new language. Many of the paras hired by school districts don't have training in special education. They just want to help kids. But it's imperative that they understand what an IEP is and how to interpret what's written in it. Collaboration with teachers who do have the education and experience writing IEPs and supporting students with disabilities will make paras more effective in the work that they do. When paras do not have adequate training on how to support a child they're assigned to work with, they may unintentionally escalate a student's behavior. I want to share an example with you of a parent I spoke with who had a second grade daughter that was suspended from school. The incident started when the class was lining up to go to lunch. The child was kind of standing in front of a boy that she didn't get along with, and he said something that bothered her. So she removed herself to the back of the line. This was a strategy her classroom teacher and special education teacher had been working with her to use to avoid conflicts with peers. The para assigned to work with this child insisted she return to her original place in line. The back and forth between this child and her para eventually led to the girl becoming very dysregulated, yelling, screaming, pushing tables over. So paras do need that generalized training to understand the disabilities of students they work with, but they also need time to talk with educators about what specifically works best for a child they are assigned to work with. In preparing my remarks for today, my mom shared with me that while she was teaching, she would often only be able to talk to a para for a few minutes in the hallway between classes. One of my mother's friends, a general education teacher, also told me that requiring time for paras and teachers to connect prior to the school year would allow all staff to, quote, hit the ground running rather than running to catch up. When paras are not given the training they need, it may potentially impact teachers and other students who can be disrupted with when a child uses problem behaviors to meet their needs. It can impact administrators who may need to take time to provide support to a child who's experiencing distress. And importantly, it can also impact the child or youth with a disability in significant ways. When an IEP or behavior plan is not properly implemented, a student may be suspended from school, as was the case with the second grader I just told you about. If the educational plan is continually not followed with fidelity, a child may be moved to a more restrictive setting. I urge you to bring this bill to the Senate floor for a vote because the parents that support our children should be given the opportunity to have as much information as they can to effectively support children and youth with disabilities. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, testifier. Are there any other folks that wish to testify at this time? All right. Well, are there any member questions? I see Representative Baker. Would you like to see your question?
Madam Chair, thank you. And to the author, Madam Chair, question for you. Typically, when I've been in the classroom, I've seen the paras and the great work they do and the challenges they have. Again, I've talked about this in the committee before. Do they typically have a kind of a group of students that they work with on a typical year or a semester, perhaps, where if it's a dozen kids or if it's a whole classroom where they're kind of with a class teacher? Is that typically how it works? And I have one follow-up after that.
Thank you.
Madam, our representative.
Thank you, Representative Baker. That's a really good question. And I hate to answer this like this, but it all depends. It depends on the school. It depends on the individual students. I can tell you what my day looked like. I spent part of the morning in with one specific student in a classroom to integrate them for morning meeting. I spent another part of an hour to two with another student, making sure that before they left for a half day at St. David's, they were being as successful as possible. Then I spent an hour or so in an LD classroom, another hour or so with a group of students coming in and out, the LD classroom, they were there the whole time, all eight students, and there was teacher and a few paras because they were higher need. I spent another few hours in an EBD classroom where kids were coming in and out as needed. But there was always a surprise every single day, and every single child, their needs are so unique, and it's really hard to play catch-up if you're not given the training and the chance to look at the IEPs. I don't think I had a chance to actually sit down during my duty day because I only got 30 minutes for lunch and no breaks, because we didn't have the coverage during my duty day to even look over the IEPs until almost a month in. So it can really be dramatically different.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Baker.
So with that, paras don't get any training ahead of the school year when the batch of kids are coming in. Am I getting that? That's what I'm hearing.
Representative.
Once again, Representative Baker, it really depends on the school district. When I worked at Hopkins High School, I was lucky to receive CPI training before my year started, but that's because I was hired before school started. Okay. Others are hired as school's starting. Others are hired halfway through the year, and it's a struggle, and our administrators want to do what they need to do to make everybody successful, but trying to find that time to get folks together is really hard.
Final question.
Representative.
And so, I mean, again, I'm an employer. I can't imagine having an employee go to work and doing what they do without some proper training of what to expect. But my question would be, why 16 hours? Why not 4 hours or 35, 40 hours? Why? Where did 16 come from?
Representative Keene?
Representative Baker, my thought is, like I said before, there was 5 hours of modular training for like health and safety, bloodborne pathogens, things like that. When I did my CPI training, that was actually supposed to be a 12-hour training, and it was 8. They had to compress it because of money. Then you also have trauma training. I had 4 hours, and that wasn't quite enough because we just got through the indicators and some strategies, but not a lot of strategies, and no time to practice or talk with our colleagues to say, hey, oh, this reminds me. This student did this. I wonder if. What if I tried this instead? So actually 16 hours barely covers some of the training folks need.
And my final comment really is, it sounds like you really haven't gotten to the individual plans. You got through all the basic stuff for all the kids, but not maybe for individual plans. I just had that question, so thank you.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and Representative Baker, that's a good point too, because paras can work in an elementary setting where we're working ourselves with 5 to 10 to 15 kids that all have IEPs. But then when I worked at the high school, I was study hall monitor, and lunchroom duty, and there's no way I had access to all those IEPs either. That's where the other type of training really comes in to play, where that CPI training is important. Because that helps all children, not just children with special needs.
Thank you, Chair Yawking. Our next question is from Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Paraprofessional Recognition Week. So I know the governor has proclaimed this. We have over 20,000 paraprofessionals working in our state who make sure every day that our children have the education they need to succeed. So thank you to Representative Joachim and all those who work as paras. I just wanted to note that. My question, Madam Chair and Representative Joachim, I was looking at 120B.363, which is the credential for education paraprofessionals, and subdivision 3 notes that within the first 60 days of supervising or working with students, a district must provide each paraprofessional with initial training in emergency procedures, confidentiality, vulnerability, reporting obligations, discipline policies, roles and responsibilities, and a building orientation. Are you suggesting that's not being done?
Representative.
Representative Erickson, that's a good question, too, and I have the statute in front of me as well. That is actually part of the training of those modules I was talking about that we viewed. So that stuff is there, and most of that stuff is available online and in pamphlet form that you are given. So I was given that. This training talks more about what we need to help with kids that have high ACEs scores, the trauma training, the crisis prevention intervention training that helps with all students in the building. So this is the stuff that we really need to do our day-to-day. We're given the basics of, you know, what you need to do in case of an emergency. This is what private student data can or cannot be shared, and the basic things you see in Subdivision 3. You also notice in Subdivision 2 it talks about must consider including provisions, that training in, and that's the part we're talking about. We're talking about more in-depth training in that subdivision, too.
Madam Representative Erickson.
Yes, and Representative Joachim, you're so right on the importance of paraprofessionals understanding that. So my last question is then, do you have access to what I found was a statewide paraprofessional consortium? Is that where you go for your online training? Is that still available? Because I think it was a little older under the Pawlenty administration, I think we created that. But is that still available to you?
Chair Yawking.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that's a good question. I've been working as para for 3 years, and I've not heard of it. So I'm not quite sure. I would have to turn to maybe phone a friend if anybody is, if that's still accessible. But, no, I had not heard of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. All right. Representative Christensen, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to say I'm wholeheartedly with you on this bill. It's long overdue, and it's really time. I encourage any member of the audience or to go and spend a day in a special education classroom and really look at the role of paraprofessionals and how how important and how integral to everything working smoothly. After I retired from teaching, I subbed a lot in special ed classrooms, and it is so important to be able to learn the individual needs of students, and especially in a special education classroom. So I think that's where this moves us a little beyond just the, this is how you treat someone with trauma, et cetera, where it's individual. It's perhaps this student needs to sit under the cafeteria table when he eats his lunch. This person likes to swoop things off of horizontal surfaces. Each student is so individual, and so that's where the IEP comes in, and that's where the training for paraprofessionals is so important. Also, there's a shortage of paraprofessionals, and many times it can be because of this, that paras aren't really prepared for some of the crazy stuff that happens in those special education classrooms. So, we need to make educating our paras and letting our paras know about each individual student a part of our education system. So I appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, any comments?
Yes, Representative Christensen, thank you so much. And you're right, after when I started my first week, I went home and talked to my husband, who right now is working on a level 4 program, and went, I don't know if I can do this. But then by the end of my time there at Aquila, I was so sad to leave, and I cannot say enough about the support and the teamwork of the paras I worked, the ESPs I worked with at Aquila, because when that student teacher or that substitute teacher would come in to the LD classroom in particular, where we were dealing with some of our most vulnerable kids, it was the para. They turned to the para for guidance on each individual child. And I know this is very important and close to your heart as well, because I know that your daughter is also an ESP in Stillwater. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Christensen, follow up.
Yeah, I will just say that is so true. When I went to sub, and I subbed quite a bit, so and you do learn to love the situation and love the kids, but it was the paras that got me through those days. It was the paraprofessionals, because you know what teachers are doing, sadly? They're working on IEPs, and they're in front of their computers very often. Not that they have nothing to do with the growth of those kids, of those children, but we need to do everything we can for paras. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. One last question, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have sat in on special ed classrooms, and I've observed para educators and teachers already, especially with difficult children. So you're doing God's work in some cases, especially. But my question is for Mr. Tim Strom. Couldn't this be negotiated locally by the local district as far as compensation and training that this bill is attempting to accomplish?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I know part of half of the answer, and I think you'll have to ask others about the rest. Some ESPs are in an organized unit, and they do bargain for their wages. I'm not sure whether the training would be considered a condition or not, and so I'm not sure that could be bargained. Somebody like Ed Minnesota would certainly be better to answer that. But not all of the ESPs are in a unit. Some of them are simply hired on an hourly rate.
Madam Chair?
Follow up?
Yeah, this first time in I think 8 years I've asked Mr. Strom a question. He didn't have the complete answer. I think you can negotiate this locally, and I'm reluctant to do one size fits all for our school districts, and I like local control. Of course, having been a school board member for quite a few years.
How many?
I usually check
16.
With you. Yeah, right. It just is another, where you tie the local school board's hands, and I believe in the principle that the closer the decision is made to where the actual issue is being addressed, the better decision you make, rather than up here at the state just passing that. That's the caution I have about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Yoakim, would you like to respond?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And no, not all ESPs are under a bargaining unit, so that would be really hard to do. Plus, the point of this bill is to make sure that there's some stable groundwork laid for the base of what paras should be getting for training to make sure when they're working with our most vulnerable kids, they have the tools that they need. And it includes money in, which I'm sure the school districts would be happy to see, to help them pay for this because they want to do this training. They do. They want to make sure that everybody has the tools they need to work with these kids. ESPs are the folks in our, and they struggle to find the money to do it. I wanna do a quick follow-up and just say thank you to Ms. Washington and Ms. Denard and Ms. Mahaber for being here today. ESPs are the folks in our schools that transport our children to and from school. They provide the most direct services to our students with disabilities and special needs. They prepare the cafeteria meals that nourish our children. They're the reasons why our hallways are mopped, our trash bins are emptied, schedules are printed, supplies are ordered, recess is kept safe, and buildings are repaired. We trust ESPs with the very important caretaking tasks they need, the professional development to be successful in those careers. And they have made their careers. And we owe them at least a chance, just a chance, to receive that training. And we owe the school districts the money to enable to do that. So you've heard testimony today about how important this all is. And I sit here before you with personal experience of how valuable this training can be. And I ask for your support for this bill.
Thank you, Chair Yoakim. I renew your motion that House File 1559 be referred to Ways and Means. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 1559 is referred to Ways and Means. All right, our next bill up is again with our Chair Yoakim. Members, we have House File 1415 up for consideration today. Chair Yoakim, would you like to move your bill and get it before the committee, please?
Thank you. I would like to move House File 1415 before the committee today for consideration and on to government operations. There are three amendments in your packets. I would like to move Amendment 2, which is actually the combination of the other two amendments that were posted. So I'd like to move the A2 author's amendment.
Chair Yoakim moves the A2 amendment. Please speak to your amendment.
The amendment helps get the bill in the right shape, and I have testifiers here to help us walk through what the bill will look like once it's amended.
Okay, Chair Yoakim has moved the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chair Yoakim, this bill is now in shape as you intend, and we can proceed. Please explain your bill.
Thank you. A little background. In 2017, the legislature passed a bill combining the services provided by the Board of Teaching and the Minnesota Department of Education Educators Licensing Division into one entity that we refer to now as Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Boards, or PELSB, which we'll say a lot today as short. This board was charged with implementing a new tiered licensure system, among other things, and I would like to wholeheartedly thank Representative Sandra Erickson for shepherding the 2016 task force through that put all this work together, and to thank our own Representative Mariani for being part of that task force on what we see, the PELSB structure that we see today. So PELSB's been functioning in a new structure for about a year now, and with all new things, sometimes they need a few little tweaks after they've been running for a while. So what you'll see in this bill is the practical changes that reflect that in House File 1415 as amended today. With me, I have Michelle Hirschfott from PELSB's rulemaking. She's a specialist there, and Jim McClausich, who's a PELSB board member that will walk through the bill, as well as Alec Luisi, the executive director of PELSB, here for any further questions. So I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Chair. Testifiers, please identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, we'd like to thank Madam Chair, Representative Yoakim, for bringing this bill forward. We We want to walk through section by section. There are three of us, and we're going to trade off a little bit to make it exciting for all of you, not just to hear one of us the whole time. We have sort of three sections. There's pieces that are technical in nature, so Michelle Hirsch-Vaught will discuss those pieces. Elements that discuss board composition, so Jim McClausich, a board member, will discuss those. And then there's just a few that would impact policy, so I will discuss those at the end.
Hello, Michelle Hirsch-Vaught, Pillsbury. I am going to begin on section one, which is on page one. And this change ensures that all licensed teachers that are working under permission, such as an out-of-field permission or an innovative program permission, still fall under the definition of a teacher as set forth in 122A.06. Jumping to section two, which is another change to a definition, this change adds licensure area to the definition of field, which aligns how the term field is used in other places in both statute and rule. For sections three and four, which straddle two pages, the bill clarifies the definitions of both teacher preparation program and teacher preparation program provider, which are currently conflated. I am going to jump all the way to section 8, which is on page 4. Section 8 includes a strike of paragraph C, which requires the Department of Education to provide Pelsby with suitable office spaces through January of 2020. This paragraph is no longer necessary. Now for section 10, this change is intended to close an existing loop. 122A.09 subdivision 9 currently includes a list of sections under Pelsby's rulemaking authority. This bill adds a reference to section 122A.2451, which currently has its rulemaking authority included in a different section of chapter 122A. That is, it's currently in 122A.092, so just closing that loop there. For section 11, which is on page 5, this change is intended to align terminology used in statute with language that is used in a national survey tool, which all approved teacher preparation providers use to survey teachers 1 year after graduation. For sections 12 and 13, which straddle pages 6 and 7, this change is intended to ensure that all approved teacher preparation providers, not just those providers that are based in colleges or universities, meet the reading strategies requirement and the technology strategies requirement. All right, for section 14, which is found on page 8, the bill strikes paragraph B. All licenses were, in fact, extended by a year, so this paragraph is no longer necessary. I am going to jump past sections 15 and 17 and wait until the end. Those are both addressed in the amendment. So jumping to section 16, which is also found on page 8. The changes to the temporary military license provision aligns the processing fee for temporary military licenses to the processing fee for all other teaching licenses, which is $57, and that is set forth in 122A.21. I'm also going to skip section 18, which is addressing licensure via portfolio, until the end of this, which is also found in the amendment. So on to section 23, which is found on page 12. This change is intended to ensure that all teacher preparation providers, not just those based in colleges and universities, can provide teacher preparation programs in English as a second language. Okay, so now jumping to sections of the licensure via portfolio sections, which are found in the amendment. And I'll read the line numbers that those changes are found at. So the amendment addresses licensure via portfolio at line 1.21 through 1.22, 2.22 through 2.29, and 3.7 through 3.11. These changes are intended to clarify language to avoid confusion about licensure via portfolio. including repealing language set forth or set to go into effect on July 1, 2019, that was enacted during the first special session in 2017 that uses outdated terminology such as five-year teaching license and educator licensing division, so tightening that language. And finally, I'll address sections 15 and 17 of the bill, which is amended at lines 1.3 and through 1.20 and then 3.1 through 3.6. The amendment makes changes to 122A.18 to, one, clearly outline which records must be searched for all first-time license applicants, and, two, provide flexibility in the manner in which the background checks are conducted, therefore allowing Pelsby to work with other state agencies that run background checks to the BCA. The amendment also adds a paragraph D to authorize Pelsby to contract with the Department of Human Services to conduct background checks as required by Chapter 122A. Similar language is added to Section 25, authorizing the Department of Human Services to contract with Pelsby. The Department of Human Services runs background checks for a number of other state agencies and has recommended these provisions be added to both Chapter 122A and 245C to streamline any future collaboration.
Madam Chair, Jim McClausage, Pelsby board member, and I'll be speaking to some language regarding composition of the board. First of all, in Section 5, the board is requesting three additional board members that would be teachers. This is to the workload the board is currently experiencing. In Section 6, we are asking that the governor be given discretion regarding who those board members are based on emerging trends in education. Also in Section 6, we would like to clarify that the teacher educator is currently in teacher education and has 5 years of classroom experience. Also in Section 6, we'd like to ensure that the administrator representing a special ed cooperative also has 5 years of teaching experience. In Section 7, we ask that we strike that language that was regarding the transition from the Board of Teaching and is no longer necessary. And in Section 9, we are requesting that members of the board not be asked to use vacation time or unpaid days by their employers. This is language that other boards have, and we have experienced board members being asked to take time off from their own personal time to attend board meetings.
Thank you.
Hey, Madam Chair, Alex Leeds, the Executive Director again. There's a few policy pieces. In Section 19, this on line 10.9, this is for a Tier 2 license. The current language says a state-approved program, the current language says you need to be enrolled in a Minnesota-approved program to get a Tier 2 license. However, we've been hearing that there are candidates up in the northwestern portion of the state that are attending a BVI, Blind Visually Impaired program at North Dakota State University and can't teach in Minnesota while enrolled in that program. This would close that loop as well as help individuals who are working in American Sign Language but enrolled in online programs both in Colorado and at Gallaudet. This language would tighten that so those individuals would be able to teach while they're enrolled in those programs. In Section 20, on line 11.2, what individuals in Minnesota, teachers in Minnesota need to do right now during their student teaching is complete an EdTPA as part of their student teaching. And then after they complete student teaching, they also have to take a pedagogy exam. I believe it's around $100 to $130 to take that pedagogy exam. The EdTPA is a much more robust examination of what a candidate's understanding of pedagogy. So we ask that the words or performance assessment be placed there so a candidate has the option to use their EdTPA score or take the pedagogy exam. And then finally, in sections 21 and 22, on lines 11.24, and 12.3, when tiered licensure statute was put in place, in the licensure renewal, a section was added where a teacher can use their teacher evaluation, their summative evaluation, or their improvement plan to count for their clock hours on renewal, which we think is a good idea. However, what the legislation did is it waived everything in the above paragraph, and included in that paragraph were meeting the needs of English language learners and cultural competence training. So what we do in this section is we just take those two pieces out so that they cannot be waived by someone just submitting a summative evaluation that might not include cultural competence training or meeting the needs of English language learners, but putting them below that to ensure that all teachers have that training upon renewal as well. that is all sections.
Well, thank you, testifiers. Are there any questions or anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this? No? Well, members, any members for Chair Joachim? Representative Erdahl, you have your hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question on rulemaking, because it's a subject that comes up frequently, and sometimes we get surprised by it. And when a rule is made, how is it published so that people are aware of what's happened?
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you for that question. Do you have a few hours for me to explain the rulemaking process to you?
Well, I do, but I don't think the Chair does.
It's a very extensive process. So we just completed the rulemaking process for tiered licensure, which most of was already codified in statute, and it was a long process even just taking that language and putting in rule. But it does have extensive meetings with stakeholders and then a required 60-day public comment period. Usually that's extended beyond the 60 days. Then there's a time where another draft is developed after those 60 days, and then another required 30 days of posting after that. Luckily, we have hired a rulemaking specialist, so I don't have to keep track of all the paperwork. Beyond that 60 days and 30 days, there's so many paperwork pieces that need to happen for legislators to be able to see the draft, the governor to be able to approve those drafts, and time between those to have stakeholder meetings. It's really a robust process that is both extremely intensive but extremely supportive of making sure that we have sound rule that stakeholders have buy-in on.
Thank you, Mr. Luisi. Is there anybody else that would follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just, you know, what I'm concerned about, is there a simple way in the end for the public to access the rule change?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, yes. Through the State Register's website, you can access both any rule drafts that are put forth, and at the Office of Administrative Hearing website, are able to put in public comments and to read what other individuals have done. And all of those links are always on our website for any rulemaking that we do, as well as being able to subscribe to our listserv to find out when we have any meetings about rulemaking.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any follow-up? Any other questions? Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you please describe a little bit about the requirements of a portfolio and maybe compare it to the observations that someone from a teacher training program would make of a teacher in training in their classroom?
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandel, thank you for that question. So licensure review portfolio was adopted a while back and has gone through some changes during that time, including in our most recent rulemaking endeavor. What a licensure via portfolio is doing is we're a standards-based state. We don't have you're not required to take courses to become a teacher. You can take courses that meet those standards, but we have a list of standards of effective practice for an initial teacher. There's 125 standards there, and then standards specific for your licensure area. And depending on the licensure area, there's a differing amount of standards. An individual who goes through teacher preparation meets those standards through pre-approved courses and experiences that have already been identified to meet those standards. Someone going through licensure via portfolio has to use their own experience, their own professional development, maybe some courses to evidence how they've met each of those standards. And what we've done through the last rulemaking process was to put together an education panel that then meets with that individual, talks with them about how they met those standards, is able to provide feedback if they feel like some of the standards are not met. So it's very dissimilar. It does not require full teacher preparation program, but it does have a pathway to evidence meeting the same standards that someone that does go through teacher preparation has to meet through their program.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Next, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These questions are for Mr. Luisi. Thank you for being here. I think my first question would deal with our House research summary for Section 20. Says that a candidate for Tier 3 or 4 to meet the pedagogy and content test requirement with a performance assessment. Are you sure that your language then in Section 20 is clear enough to point out that there is the EdTPA or pedagogy test, and then on top of that there's a content test that's required?
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you for raising this question. We discussed this at a meeting recently, and I have read over it. And, you know, clear enough, I think things can always be a little bit clearer. So just for members, the intent here is that the performance assessment only would waive the pedagogy exam, not the content examination. And it almost feels like there might need to be a comma to separate those two pieces out, because it says to pass an examination or performance assessment of general pedagogical knowledge and examinations of licensure field content, specific content. So I would look to nonpartisan staff to make sure that we have the right punctuation in there to make sure that the performance assessment only applies to the pedagogy exam.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, and thank you for that. I have another question about the repeal of the cultural competency from the teacher evaluation. Do you not think that teacher evaluation will reveal how well a teacher addresses her diverse or his diverse learners?
Mr. Luisi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. Under the licensure renewal, there's lots of different pieces that we ask teachers to go through the renewal every year, including reading instruction, mental illness, suicide prevention, mental illness training, not mental illness themselves, suicide prevention. I was a teacher for 10 years. Mental illness is sort of a required trait. We think cultural competence training and meeting the needs of English learners are within those buckets of so important that we don't want to risk that the teacher development evaluation plan might miss those. So we think they should be moved to this other section.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Follow up?
One last question, and this is not a part of a technical change, but Section 11. I just want to call your attention to this because I used to evaluate all these teacher preparation programs, and we put into law a few years ago lines 11 through, 11 through the bottom, and well, it continues to the top of the next page. But when these teacher preparation programs report the summary data, I looked at a variety of them yesterday, and I want to call your attention to the fact that only the University of Minnesota and Winona, of those that I checked, and I didn't look at all of them, actually identified themselves. So if you're a member of the public or otherwise, you go to the drop box, and of course you see the name of the college. But when you get to the website, there's no identification of some of these schools of education. And that really bothered me. I can show you, you know, later, but for example, the University of Minnesota Twin Cities definitely has a header called Teacher Preparation Program Data Summary Report. And they have a very good paragraph before they begin the summary data. Winona does the same. But every other one I checked, and I checked Oxford, Concordia Moorhead, I checked Walden, and several others, and they were missing that heading. And so I hope that your board pays attention to that, because anyone who wants to go in and look at that summary data should know, even though they did the Dropbox, should know on the actual website information which school this is. So I just call that to your attention, because that was troubling to me as I tried to look at the summary data, which I know we put into law a few years ago. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any follow-up on that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, thanks for bringing that to our attention, and we'll look into it. Just to note, and this is in no way, we think the committee, that this statute came with no funding. So the funding for that online system is still, we're still trying to get it built to its full capacity without funding. We've had to use other aspects of our funds.
Thank you, Mr. Luisi. Our next question is from Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I'll save some time and pass it on here. Representative Erickson asked my question. I was wondering, too, about the repealing that option for demonstrating cultural competency. I do feel that one's very evident, and would maybe ask you to reconsider that part. I can understand suicide training, but anyway, I will let it go because I got my question answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Section 15, it's on page 8 of the bill. Are we eliminating the requirement that a background check be performed by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension? Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Luisi.
I haven't been voted in, but thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grunhagen, not at all. So what we have been doing is we have been working with lots of different other state agencies that use the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension background check in ways that are actually a little bit more thorough than we have been able to. Right now, we only do it upon initial licensure. So currently, we've been working with the Department of Human Services, and the amendment here uses language that would allow us to go through the Department of Human Services, who then goes through the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, to actually make our background check a little bit more robust.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Chair, are there any other people or any members that would like to ask a question? Wonderful. All right, well then, at this time...
Can I have the final word real quick?
Please do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the discussion, members. I know Mr. Luizzi's been taking notes, and I have too. I think we all share the goal of having licensed and highly qualified teachers in our classrooms. PALSBY helps make that happen. This bill will make sure that they have the tools to do that. So I ask for your support and would renew the motion to move House File 1415 as amended to govern operations, as it does have a little section on page 12 on rulemaking.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to amend that motion to include that there is a direction given to the reviser to change the title of this bill as well. I think if you look at the House nonpartisan research summary, you find there what the public should be reading, because nonpartisan always does an excellent job of explaining what this bill consists of. So I would like to amend the motion as it goes to government operations with an instruction to the reviser to change that introductory clause, the relating clause that describes the bill.
Chair Yalke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, do you have a suggestion that I could carry forward to GovOps?
Madam Chair and Representative Joachim, yes, just copy or suggest to the reviser they use what nonpartisan used in their title for their overview on all of the bills. They are excellent. And I think sometimes if the author doesn't check a title, the public is very deceived, and we don't want that to be occurring. We want the public and everyone to know exactly what this bill has as its content.
Chair Yalkin.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I share your want for transparency. So once again, I renew the motion to move House File. Oops, I'm seeing some motion at the front table. I'm sensing an oral amendment.
Representative Erickson.
Yes, Madam Chair. I've been instructed by Mr. Strom that you could include it in the motion as you move forward, and they will make they'll make sure the title gets changed. And Mr. Strom, why don't you comment further on the instruction, or Ms. Pera?
Madam Chair, Representatives Erickson and Joachim, when the bill is moved, it's possible to amend the title. So in this case, if you just instruct us to amend the title accordingly or something like that, then we can work with Mr. Benjamin and have that on the committee report as it goes upstairs. The issue with the other bill was, since it wasn't going out of this committee, we couldn't do something to affect the way that title shows up on the reviser's system.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Yalkeen, does that meet with your pleasure?
Chair Yalkeen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, yes. So what I will say then is I will move House File 1415 as amended with a suggested title correction to the Government Operations Committee per nonpartisan staff.
Thank you. Is there any more discussion of this motion? In hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. House File 1415, as amended, is referred to Government Operations.
All right, thank you. We're just about only 5 minutes over where I wanted to be, so thank you, members. We have, let's see here, House File, get to my right place, 1329 in front of us today, that Representative Kunesh-Podein will be Moving. Representative Kunesh-Podein, would you like to move your bill? The intention is to lay it over for possible inclusion.
I so move. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, did you have an amendment? Nope, you don't
no,
have
No, I don't believe I have an
okay,
amendment.
Got it.
Thank you.
Sorry, I have other papers.
For me, for a loop.
Sorry about that. Great. So, would you like to proceed with your... Yeah, I had my amendment for my other bill, which you don't want on your bill. So, would you like to proceed with describing your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I might have messed up your organization up there. But thank you.
So, I move that 1329 before us with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Minnesota has high-value standards for many professions, doctors and nurses, accountants and building trades. The same should be true for our teachers. But in 2017, the legislature dramatically changed our teaching licensing system. And I am a teacher. I've been teaching for over 20 years. I've been a classroom teacher, licensed library media specialist as well. So those changes in 2017 changed our teaching licensing system quite a bit, and the goal was to make it less complex. But what we really did was drastically reduce the requirements to teach in Minnesota classrooms. We don't need to lower the standards to make teaching license system easier to navigate. That's the bottom line, and that's why I am introducing House File 1329 to fix the tiered licensing system and restore our high standards for teaching. I just want to note one thing about this bill. Nothing in this bill prevents a highly qualified teacher from out of state from teaching in Minnesota. You might remember that this was a big reason that proponents wanted to change the laws in the very first place. What this House file would do, House File 1329, it would close the loophole that allows a candidate to attain Tier 3 license without having completed any teacher preparation, which is absolutely critical for students to succeed. It limits Tier 2 eligibility to individuals who are actively working toward a Tier 3 license. This change yet again recognizes the importance of rigorous teacher preparation. This House File 1329 eliminates the requirement that ties a teacher's summative evaluation to their licensure status. Right now, principals have too much power over a teacher's license. Just one bad or one flawed evaluation or a personal interpretation by a principal can prevent a teacher from obtaining that licensure. This bill would require districts to report to Pelsby the number of teachers at each tier in each building. Parents should know if their student's teacher has no formal training on how to teach. This bill gives Tier 1 teachers the freedom to be part of the teacher bargaining unit and the protection against exploitation. Today, I would like to invite four educators and one aspiring teacher to share more about why these changes are important to our students and to the professional teachers in front of them every single day. So at this time, I would like to invite my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Please, whoever's testifying first, just state your name for the record and proceed. It is my intention to give each side 15 minutes if possible. To state their case, and I know that the opposition has a lot of folks here today who want to speak, and we're just not going to be able to get it in, but they have provided written testimony that will absolutely make sure that the members of the committee see. So I have Ms. Helgen here will be starting the clock, and if I would prefer if we get through the whole 15 minutes of testimony, then ask questions for, I'm trying to decide if we should ask questions for these testifiers, or let's wait until we get through 15 minutes from you, 15 minutes from the other side, and then move to questions, because that might be a little bit more helpful. So we are starting right now. Thank you. State your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Dennis Strawn. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Dennis Strawn, and I am a high school social studies teacher in the Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan School District. I am one of the many educators across the state who are concerned about the current licensing system. Some say the new licensure law will attract much-needed teachers of color to the profession by not requiring them to go through teacher preparation training. But using that as an excuse to lower the standards is unacceptable and insulting. Lowering the licensing standards sends a message that teachers of color are not capable of meeting the standards to begin with, and that's just not true. We hold high expectations for students in the classroom, and we should also expect the same terms in terms of our practice. Teaching is a profession. I'm also concerned that Tier 1 teachers, many who are educators of color, don't have the freedom to join their local bargaining unit. Union membership protects the academic freedom I need to bring my full, authentic self into the classroom. I can freely stand up for the social justice issues that affect my students and my profession without fear of retaliation, and I get free professional development that helps me to continue to grow and remain relevant as an educator. By lowering the standards, you're creating the conditions for teachers of color turnover to get even worse. Staff churn is expensive for schools, frustrating for teachers who stay, and confusing for students. What I'm telling you today is what you will never hear from groups that depend on money from greedy millionaires and powerful foundations. They want to privatize, to get education on the cheap, to make money. The children deserve better. They deserve highly qualified, fully trained educators, period. And good people who dare to enter this great profession do not deserve to be set up for failure. Here's how you ensure student and educator success. 1, respect my profession, close the licensure loopholes, remove the financial barriers to getting a teaching degree, address the teacher pay gap, fund our schools so they can hire appropriate numbers of school support staff, give educators a voice when important decisions are being made, provide mentors for on-the-job training, and recruit and retain educators of color through fully funding the initiatives outlined by the Increased Teachers of Color Act. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Dron. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Abby Kelly Hands. I am a special education licensed teacher. I'm currently in a position as a special education coordinator for Cambridge ICNE school districts. I have provided support to the classroom for students with a variety of disabilities in various federal settings, from co-taught, push-in, pull-out, self-contained classrooms, and special education-only programs. I'm here this morning because I want to speak about how the new tiered licensing system is playing out in our school districts across the state. We now can have teachers who have never completed teacher preparation coursework in classrooms with our most vulnerable students. What does this mean? Special education teachers are supposed to deliver developmentally appropriate programming that is grounded in evidence-based practices. They have to write individual education plans, which are legally binding documents that the school districts are held to, and they're supposed to be individualized for students where they may not have ever had a child psychology course or behavior management course. They may have never received training on connections between social-emotional learning and disability categories, or even how to write an appropriate individual education plan. There can be serious repercussions for special education students if their general education teachers also don't have rigorous preparation coursework. Part of IDEA says that general education teachers have to sit on child study teams, which is part of looking for students with disabilities. But if even general education teachers are looking at students and not understanding the implications of what disability looks like, this can have some serious consequences. Research shows that a lack of teacher preparation is correlated with an over-identification of students for exclusive special education settings, and this has significant implications for our students, particularly our students of color who are over-identified as needing special services. Please make the necessary changes to Minnesota's tiered licensing system so our most vulnerable students have the highly prepared teachers that they deserve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And if we could just keep moving along here, the next person, state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Angelo Suji, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I also thank the members of the committee for that. I am a licensed chemistry, physics, and physical science teacher with the Minneapolis Public School. I am a teacher of color. Teacher preparation is critically important to student achievement and success, not on-the-job training. 60 years of academic research has shown that students have better outcomes when they learn from educators who have rigorous preparation, both in content, the art and science of teaching. So what does it look like for our students? It means that they have well-prepared teachers who know how to handle behavioral issues in a school, not just minimizing disruptions. They have teachers. That's because they have training in classroom and behavior management and restorative practices. It means they have well-prepared teachers who are equipped to discuss issues surrounding race, culture, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation so all students feel safe, welcomed, and engaged at school. That's because they have training in cultural competency. It means they have well-prepared science teachers who understand science and engineering practices, the cross-cutting concepts, and the core disciplinary ideas. That's because they have teachers who have training in how to teach science. Unfortunately, Minnesota's current law undervalues teacher preparation and makes it optional. This has dramatic implications for all our students, but also profound implications for all the students who need it the most. Minnesota needs to close the loophole that allows a candidate to attend a Tier 3 licensure without completing a teacher preparation program. Thank you very much for listening this morning, and please close the loophole.
Thank you, Ms. Oshu. Next testifier, state your name for the record and proceed.
Caitlin Lillis. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Caitlin Lillis. I'm an elementary education major at Minnesota State University Moorhead. I'm also the Education Minnesota Student Program President. I've been working for the past 4 years to complete my teacher preparation program. During this time, I have collected thousands of dollars of debt because my preparation program requires just about 1,000 unpaid hours in the classroom over the 4 years, which means that I don't have enough time to work and fully pay for my program. Even before that, working 25 hours a week wasn't enough to pay for tuition, living expenses, and all of the fees for the tests that I have to take to get my teacher's license. I know that successfully completing this program is worth it because it's going to help me to become a more effective teacher. All of the experiences I have had are vital to preparing me for my own classroom. I'm currently student teaching, and even so, I feel like I have barely scratched the surface of experience. You need to use what you learn and work with real students in real situations, and it is more than just knowing the academic content needed for the classroom. It is knowing how students work and what they need to be successful. Under the current law, someone such as my husband, who is working towards a mechanical engineering degree, could apply for a license and eventually reach the same licensure level that I am entering the field at, even though they have no training in the art and science of teaching. He doesn't understand classroom and behavior management, childhood brain development, social-emotional learning, or how to teach children from other cultures. I'm not trained in thermodynamics, statics and dynamics, materials science, or design safety. There is no way I would be hired as a mechanical engineer, and rightfully so. My future customers would be horrified to learn I had no training in engineering, just as I expect parents will react when they learn more about what this law did to teaching. Minnesotans value high standards for many professions. The same should be true for our teachers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lillis. Next testifier, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Becky Hespin. I am a special education program ESP in the Osseo School District. I have been a special education ESP for 27 years. As an ESP, my primary job responsibility is to support students in the classroom. I'm there to reinforce instruction that has already been given. I support the classroom learning environment so teachers can teach and the students can learn. My concern with the tiered licensure system is that my role will now switch from supporting students to supporting teachers that don't have the correct preparation. I see firsthand how teacher preparation affects classroom management and appropriate relationships with students, especially with special education students. Teachers need to understand how all students learn and the best way that they learn. They need to know how to differentiate curriculum. It's critical to the success of our students. We only get one chance to give our students a quality education. Instead of putting money and resources into these low tiers, we should be putting those resources in to grow our own programs like we have in Osseo to support ESPs who want to move into the teaching profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hespin. I think that's all we have signed up for testimony for in support. We have 3 minutes left if there's anybody else in support that would like to testify. I'm seeing
one person
left. We'll let you state your testimony, and then if we go a little bit over, I'll add that to the other side as well. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Laura Mogelson. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Congresswoman, thank you for allowing me to testify in support of this bill. I am here from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, representing MACTE, which is the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. MACTE supports a focus on high standards for licensure that are measurable and consistent. Specific changes in this bill that help us achieve this goal are removing the option to earn a Tier 2 without being enrolled in or having completed an approved teacher preparation program, and that includes alternative preparation. And second, the removal of the option to achieve a Tier 3 license based on 3 years of Tier 2 teaching with no improvement plan. Our concern is around the lack of parity between the pathways to Tier 3 licensure, C-lines 3.20 to 4.4. The option to earn a Tier 3 license after 3 years of teaching with a Tier 2 license and not being on an improvement plan does not meet the bar of a Tier 3 license. This option creates a loophole through which a teacher without pedagogical preparation or content coursework could be licensed with parity to a Tier 3 professional licensed teacher in Minnesota based only on the recommendation of an individual employer's evaluation. This assessment may or may not even be aligned with Minnesota statutes and rules. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Mogelson. We still have a minute 30 left if anybody wants to say anything.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we're ready to move on.
Okay. Would you like to make any comments before we move on to the opposition?
I just want to remind the audience and the members here that going into teaching is not it's not a fluffy job. It's a hard job. And we put a lot of time and energy and money into our profession. As a 35-year-old single mom, I made that choice of going into the teaching profession. And it was a hardship for my family. Single mom doing daycare in my home, working a part-time job on the weekend, going to weekend college. But I knew that it was important for me that I got all of the training and understood the complexity of what it's like to educate the children of the future. And, yeah, it was hard. It took me years and years to pay off my student loan. My kids had student loans before I was able to pay off my student loans. But we go into that profession understanding that's the circumstances. And if I hadn't had the training that I received, if I had not gone through the student training that I had, I wouldn't have been the teacher that I am today. And I find that it's hurtful, and it isn't insulting when Minnesota would think that somebody could come into the classroom without having gone through those training, without having had the mentoring, without having had the pedagogy, and could do my job. I was telling somebody, I cut my husband's hair since I met him for over 20 years. I've cut his hair.
I'm not a licensed hairdresser. Does that mean that I could walk into a salon and say, hey, I know how to cut hair. Let me try this on here. You know, let me get in here and cut. No, there are licensure, there are laws, there are rules for that. And I just want to you all to keep in mind how important it is that we are ensuring that those folks that are in front of our students have the skills necessary to teach them. And maybe they don't enter it. Maybe we have community experts that come into our schools in order to fill the voids. But it's important that they continue and that they get the education and understand the pedagogy that it takes to become a well-rounded teacher. And so with that, Madam Chair, I turn it over to our next testifiers.
All right. Thank you. And I do have a list started here. So Ms. Dietrich, and then Jason Mix, Nicole Tesher on deck. Why don't you state your name for the record and proceed? And we'll give you a few minutes to get settled. All right. Ms. Dietrich, state your name for the record and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and today I am here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and finally the St. Paul Public Schools. And we are, and I am speaking on behalf of them to respectfully share our opposition to House File 1329, which proposes significant changes to the recently enacted tiered licensure system. Our opposition is grounded in one unified message. Please allow the new tiered licensure system some time to work before altering major pieces that we actively advocated for prior to its enactment. Today, because of the time constraints, we have many testifiers who can testify to the real-life application to this to the new tiered licensure system in their schools. So for my purposes here today, is since we have many new members, I am just going to provide some context that and some events that led up to this historical change in Minnesota's teacher licensure system. The long journey began in 2016 with the Office of the Legislative Auditor report on the teacher licensure system in Minnesota. It was clear from the report that Minnesota's teacher licensure system was broken and confusing. The OLA report only confirmed the frustration that our school districts, all the way from St. Paul all the way to Thief River Falls, were experiencing due to growing teacher shortages and stagnant educator diversity. The stories were mounting that navigating the old process served as a barrier to getting qualified and motivated individuals into careers in education. The old system needed reform. So in response, the bipartisan teacher licensure study group was formed, and we as stakeholders shared thoughts, ideas, and testimony to illustrate the daily hiring challenges facing our schools. Recommendations were made for the 2017 legislative session. Dozens of meetings and thousands of hours of discussions spurred recommendations that were debated and improved throughout session. Legislators heard input from teachers, school leaders, school board members, the Department of Education, and from Governor Dayton himself. The new tiered licensure system provides the much-needed flexibility and trust that school leaders need, particularly in shortage areas. We feel strongly that this historical reform the governor signed into law in the thorough bipartisan process that created the framework should be allowed to work before making adjustments this year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Jason Mix. I'm the high school principal at Howard Lake Waverly-Winsett High School. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Give you a little background of who I am. I don't have a prepared statement, so I'm going to speak from my heart, and it's what I do. I'm an educator of 18 years. I have spent 8 years out in Southern California. Six of those I was a classroom teacher, two of those I was an administrator. 3 years in Illinois, which I was in DeKalb, Illinois, which was about 60 miles west of Chicago. And then the last 7 years, I've been back here in my home state of Minnesota as the high school principal at Howard Lake Waverly-Winsett High School. Our school district is about 1,200 students. My high school is a little under 350 students, to give you context of what where I'm at. I'm also our state coordinator for the Minnesota Association Secondary School Principals, where I represent Minnesota school principals out in Washington, D.C. And I have significant concerns about some of these changes to the tiered licensure systems. Understand, and please understand, and I can speak to for all of our principals here in Minnesota, is that we take hiring and hiring great teachers as very, very serious. Our teachers are the number one indicator of student success, and we work to hire great teachers, to have great people and great teachers on staff. The original bill was, in my understanding, was to help us make these hiring a little bit easier for us. And in the original bill, and now the version of it, this version that's coming out, will hamstring us in the sense that if you look at a school like mine, last year I had a chemistry and a physics position open. I was lucky to have one applicant to teach chemistry and physics, which is a requirement for the graduation requirements. Had I not had that one applicant, come September 4th, I had to have a conversation with those students and the parents as far as who was going to teach. I'm not sure what we would do, but that's under my responsibility. And it allows us to take a person that may have a master's degree in chemistry or physics, to allow them to work with a mentor teacher, to allow them to work with me as the school administrator, to begin and build their teaching career if that's where they want to go. Removing some of these provisions removes our ability to grow our own as we would have in industry or in private business. I ask you to think about that. Another concern I have.
Just want to make sure other folks get a chance to talk.
One more thing here. One more concern I have is the reporting out of the tier one and tier two teachers. What I see that being is unintended consequences towards our teachers, our students, and our schools. Okay, it looks at the idea of how many ineffective teachers do we have in our schools, okay, and how is that going to impact our students and our teachers. We have amazing teachers here in Minnesota, and I'll stand by them, and I know the hard work that they do each and every day. But because they're a Tier 2 teacher, a Tier 1 teacher, does not mean that they're ineffective. That means that they are working their tail off to help support our kids. Labeling those teachers as ineffective, okay, I think is a travesty towards our teachers and towards education in Minnesota. As administrators, we do everything we can to support our teachers and, more importantly, support our students.
Thank you. I have up next Nicole Tesher, Jessica Lippa, and then Drew Moldenhauer on deck. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Nicole Tesher. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am the Executive Director of Human Resources for NOCA Hennepin and a board member of MASPA. MASPA stands for the Minnesota Association of School Personnel Administrators. We represent school district human resource professionals in our state, those who ensure we hire great teachers in our classroom for our students. MASPA does not support the changes offered in House File 1329. This year was the first year HR departments implemented the tiered licensure system, with Pelsby rulemaking occurring late last fall. Any structural modifications like those suggested in this bill will create confusion and constant systemic change for our school districts, our currently licensed Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers, and our aspiring teachers. As a state, we need time to collect information on how currently adopted structure serves our students. Besides the structural changes itself, so early in the implementation process, MASPA is also concerned with the bill's further limitation on renewal of Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses, the bill's limiting effect on Tier 2 licenses being only born from traditional licensure programs, the bill's impact of limiting great Tier 2 teachers from becoming Tier 3 teachers without some type of traditional licensure program, the bill's impact on career and tech education programs, and the bill's impact on districts' efforts towards creating a diverse teacher workforce. At first blush, in our district, the tiered system looks promising towards statewide efforts to ensure a diverse teaching core. Our Tier 1 teachers are more diverse than our traditionally trained teachers, which I believe is similar to initial state data also. Please know that less than 1.5% of teacher positions in Anoka-Hennepin are filled with Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers. But these are positions that may go unfilled if the bill was adopted. It's the 0.2 FTE dance teaching position. So this is one day a week, 1 hour a day. It's the American Sign Language position. It's the visual arts positions. And it's our district's robust career and tech education program, which Ms. Letho will speak to. My HR colleagues have also noted concerns with immersion programs under the proposed legislation. As a former teacher who took a traditional pathway into education, please trust our school districts and our HR professionals to ensure that the best teachers, whether it be Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, or Tier 4, are in before our students. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I have Drew Maldonar. Jessica Lips, Drew Maldonar, Brian Goranson. I don't want to take up your time, so if you could just come up right next, and thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Jessica Lipa, and I'm the Career and Technical Education Director in Anoka-Hennepin Schools, and I represent Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Education Administrators. The tiered licensing system has positively impacted career and technical education across the state. It allowed school districts the opportunity to grow, train, license, and retain high-quality CTE teachers supporting our state's most in-demand occupations, encouraging CTE teachers to combine industry-related experience with the best practices and professional development to obtain licensure. The proposed changes of the law will significantly reduce the number and the diversity of programs and pathways for students that lead to employment. It will add barriers in CTE and further grow our teacher shortage. In many cases, the proposed changes will force districts to close programs due to the instability and inability to find qualified teachers. Additionally, students will lose the opportunity to earn industry-recognized credentials, articulated college credits, and concurrent enrollment in career and tech ed courses, as those opportunities often require a teacher with recent industry experience. It will be impossible to recruit the best and most qualified candidates from industry if there is no opportunity for job stability beyond 1 year. Unfortunately, telling a candidate there is at least one renewal, but beyond that, it's up to board discretion, does not offer confidence in job stability and security. Because of the additional changes and limitations proposed, CTE teachers will not have the opportunity to move or to obtain other tiers because of the lack of teacher preparation programs available. And for career pathways licenses, there is no state standards or programs for those areas, so there is no option for portfolio, and there are no teacher preparation programs for enrollment. Removing opportunities to obtain and move to other tiered licenses, including limiting renewal options, will have devastating impacts to CTE and to school districts. Finally, I leave you with this. 47% of career and tech ed teachers in our state are on special permissions, Tier 1 and Tier 2, so our impact is very high. I ask you now to listen to Drew Moldenhauer, who is a Tier 2 teacher in our school district, who can give you a personalized example of his experience.
Thank you, Mr. Moldenhauer. State your name for the record and proceed.
Drew Moldenhauer. Madam Chair and Committee, hello. My name is Drew Moldenhauer, and I am a law enforcement careers teacher at Step High School in Anoka, Minnesota. I currently hold a master's degree in public safety executive leadership, and I'm a former police officer of 11 years. During my time as a police officer, I taught officers an active shooter, use of force, crisis intervention, and I was also a field training officer. This is where I found my passion for teaching. I also teach classes at Hennepin Technical College. I accepted this career opportunity because I was granted a Tier 2 license, which gave me more career stability. With a Tier 2 license, I would not be released at the end of the year. I contacted Pelsby and Ms. Sleepa several times to make sure this was clear, that I could move from a Tier 2 licensure to a Tier 3 license, eventually obtaining tenure, before resigning as a police officer and taking on this career choice. Our college articulation agreement we share with Alexandria and Normandale Community Colleges requires me to have 5 years full-time police officer experience in order for me to teach and have students be eligible for articulated credits. Without my experience in the field, I wouldn't qualify under the articulation agreement. I'm willing to take professional development courses and learn more in the field of pedagogy. However, if the tiered licensures go away, it will be very difficult to attract good professional police officers to teach due to career instability. I believe police officers will not want to leave a secure career to come to a field where they are released at the end of every year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Then I have Brian Goranson, Adam Harris, and Jesse Lewis.
Hi, my name is Brian Goranson. I'm the principal at the St. Paul Conservatory for Performing Artists, more popularly known as SPCPA. It's a 912 charter school. When SPCPA was founded in 2005 through the mayor's office, we were given the directive by former Mayor Randy Kelly and Kathy Kelly to prepare future performing artists and to also prepare the students for college. While the academic teachers will be traditionally licensed, the arts teachers, they said, must be current, working, professional dancers, musicians, and theater artists who understand conservatory. We serve approximately 500 students each year. We have 50 to 60 part-time professional artists, most teaching anywhere from 0.01 FTE to 0.2 FTE. Previously, these artists worked under the community expert permission, and at this point, we'd welcome it back. Each year, more than 50% of our graduating class moves on to study dance, theater, or music in college. This past year, SPCPA students were accepted to Juilliard, Carnegie Mellon, NY Tisch School of the Arts, Berklee School of Music, Cal Arts, North Carolina School of the Arts, to name a few. Academically, students last year are now going to Yale, Columbia, Brown, Northwestern, Rice, Howard, and on and on. We have hundreds of alum working in film and television, on Broadway, and professional theaters across the country with recording contracts, dancing and playing music internationally. Just last night, a current student appeared on NBC's World of Dance. If you accept that there are careers in dance, theater, or music, that there are career post-secondary academic pathways that require specific preparation, that early exposure to the world of work is valuable, then it is a reasonable conclusion that SPCPA can only fulfill its mission to train aspiring performing artists by integrating the highest level of professional talent available into our students' day-to-day learning environment. The choice to use working professionals is both logical and integral to the demonstrated career success of our students.
Thank you, Mr. Goranson. We're over time, but I want to make sure Adam Harris and Jesse Lewis get a chance to speak because they're teachers. So please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is H. Adam Harris. I'm an actor and a teacher based in the Twin Cities. I have the great pleasure of performing on almost all of the stages here in town, including the Minnesota Orchestra and the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Recently, you might have saw me as the voice of the Lorax speaking for the trees at the Children's Theater Company. And currently, I am rehearsing a five-person version of The Hobbit, which will be performed for over 10,000 students here in Minnesota. In addition to that, I'm a teaching artist, resident teaching artist with the Guthrie Theater, the Children's Theater Company, the Education Coordinator at the Playwright Center. I sit on the accessibility committee of the Guthrie. I'm always working, I'm always teaching, I'm always thinking about that. And basically combined with my artistic resume and with all the work that I do as a teaching artist, there is no teacher prep program that can prepare me better than my career has. And so when I set foot into a classroom at SPCPA, I teach, my primary class is Theater for Social Justice. What I'm teaching young people to think about is how we can be responsible artists, how we can think about art in a different way, how we can think about the power of theater in a different way. I teach them a class focused on identity, on consent, on wellness, on thinking about civic duty. My students would be very, very happy to see me here making a political speech before them because every year they have to make a political speech in my class, and they are graded on their pacing, on their rhetoric, on how they speak. So they would have so much fun right now, like grading me right now. I share all of this to remind you that the arts are pivotal to young people. They're incredibly important. I didn't follow a standard teacher prep program. The only teacher preparation that I have is what I bring into the room every time I walk in. I also can't stress enough that every time I've taught at SPCPA over the past 4 years, I've had the incredible blessing of teaching students who look like me. And I have to tell you that those students, every single year, there's an emotional glint in their eyes. It's reflected in the awe in which they see me. They've never seen anyone who looks like me in charge of a classroom. And I'm sometimes their first or only second teacher of color, and I'm an artistic teacher, and I'm a queer teacher. They've never seen this before. I beg you, don't close the opportunity for me to be in that classroom.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. And now we have, we're already almost 5 minutes over time, but I want Jesse Lewis to be able to speak.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Lewis. State your name for the record and proceed.
Jesse Lewis, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jesse Lewis, and I'm a middle school physical education Tier 1 teacher at Hiawatha College Prep. I've been working with youth in our community for over 15 years, the same community I've been a part of and connected to for 37 years. Over the past 5 years, I've transitioned into the education system, most recently as a classroom teacher. The experience I gained prior to entering the classroom gave me the ability to be the teacher that I am today. My gym class is a top-performing gym class across our network. My classes have seen a 95% growth in the fitness gram assessments, which is the standard assessment across the country for PE. This current school year, I've received a 87% rating in our staff survey and a 94% rating in our student survey, both being the highest in our school, and that's including teachers with the traditional pathway. The Tier 1 and Tier 2 pathway has provided me a position where I can have a direct impact on our students and our community. Pushing teachers like myself out will be detrimental to our students, who oftentimes never have a teacher of color or lack the opportunity to learn from teachers who they can identify with. My story is one of many. Passing this bill will negatively impact our students, schools, and our community as a whole. It is in the best interest of all parties to not pass a bill that put our kids at risk. Lastly, my son is a eighth grade student at the school that I teach. And when talking about potentially losing my teaching license, he said, "But Dad, I've never had a gym class or gym teacher like you. You actually make everybody work hard. I am a passionate teacher. I love what I do, and thank you for your time."
Thank you so much, Mr. Lewis. Now, I did give 5 more minutes to the opposition, but I thought it was important to have some teacher voices. And that being said, as a chair, I just want to thank all of the teachers and ESPs that are in the audience today, testifying on all 4 bills we had up today. The work that you do in our classroom means a lot to our future generation, and I'm not just saying that because I'm married to a teacher of 27 years. So, with that, Ms. Kudish-Badin, Representative Kudish-Badin, would you like to say anything else? Otherwise, I'm going to open it up for questions. We do have a committee coming in right after us, so I'd like to be done by 12:35 to give time for staff to move things around. Keep in mind, this bill is just being laid over for possible inclusion. There's a lot more work to be done on it. But with that, Representative Kudish-Badin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for all of you who testified here today. And I especially want to thank those individuals that have stepped into those teaching roles where we have found to be short of. I think it's important to know that this bill is not about putting those down that don't have their licensure and elevating those that do, especially when it comes to filling in those very difficult areas, because what this bill does is it provides the availability for our school districts and our superintendents to use that good cause renewal. If you're doing a good job in your area, then we want to keep you as a teacher. But what we really want to do is we want to make you the best teacher that you can be. We want to make you the best teacher for your students. And so this is not about licensed versus non-licensed teachers right now, or those with a degree or not a degree. It's about ensuring that we are providing areas for you to improve as a teacher and encourage you to continue down those roads, because we need the passion that we've seen here this morning. With that, we're open for questions.
And I also wanted to mention Mr. Luizzi is here from Palsby, too, to answer any technical questions. He didn't want to take up time testifying further, but he's here in case anybody has any questions. So I have on the list Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quick comments here. I've had questions about this tiered licensure system that concerned me in the past. Could a Tier 1 teacher be hired over a Tier 4 if the Tier 4 was available? Will qualified teachers from out of state be able to teach in Minnesota pedagogy? These are concerns that I had. And there are changes in this bill presently, and Representative Kudish-Badin's bill, that I could support at some point. But in a larger sense, the current law just passed, as Ms. Dietrich pointed out. It is supported substantially in greater Minnesota, where we have serious shortage problems, and it's even supported in an editorial today with the Star Tribune. And so I think we need to take time to see how this works, not throw it away after just a year. And again, in another larger sense, the comments about lack of preparation, the needs for preparation, of mentoring, we have greater problems that, frankly, the current law and the proposed bill today are only nibbling at the corners. We have problems in how we prepare our teachers, how we support our teachers, and how we pay our teachers. And we need to address that. And if you want to know, I've got plans for all of those, but that's for another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, before I ask my question, I do have a question. I'd like to echo Representative Erdahl's concern, but I'm a bit perplexed and confused as to why we would be bringing this up right now, these changes, when this just went into effect this year. And so to me, you would give something a chance and see if there are issues. We haven't had a chance to even figure out if there are issues. But my question comes, it has to do with Tier 1. And some of the testimony I heard were giving the idea that maybe our schools are going to be flooded with all these unqualified teachers. We heard from a number of very passionate Tier 1 teachers who are saying this is a legitimate way to work into the teaching field and why we need more than just that one-year window. Tier 1 is hugely important to Greater Minnesota. In Albert Lee, we had an opening for, I believe it was an accounting class. This was a number of years ago, and there were no applicants for it. So we actually, in our school district, took a teacher who had a master's degree, or not a teacher, an office staff person who had a master's degree in accounting, and that person became the community expert. That's what it was called back then. My question is, we have had the community expert option for many, many years in our school districts, and I don't believe I ever heard of widespread issues that those teachers or the people teaching in that category were having issues. So is there evidence that on all the years we've had community experts in our schools that somehow these people have not been effective? Is there evidence in the classroom, in test scores, and so on? Because I haven't seen that evidence. It seems to me it's an option that schools need to have, and we've just given them more flexibility and availability of using that option with the current system.
Representative Kunesh-Budin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bennett. My first response is to your questions about why do we do this after 1 year is I would prefer to be more proactive than reactive. Do we want to sit around and wait for time for something to happen before we make changes? And in response to the rest of your question, I think I will pass it over to the expert.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Sarah Ford. I work with Education Minnesota. I do education policy research. I'm also a parent of two children in public school, and 2 weeks ago we got a letter from our children's high school saying they're both enrolled in Spanish. As you know, your teacher's out on extended medical leave. We don't know how many months she'll be gone. We've been unable to find anybody who speaks Spanish to fill this role. So as a Tier 1 hire, we've now hired someone who doesn't speak Spanish, read Spanish, or can communicate in Spanish in any way, and that will be your student's teacher for the next untold number of months. So there's an example of one of the things that's happening with our Tier 1 license. On the question of why now, I challenge the body to think a little bit. There's been a context established that outstate Minnesota and clearly all the administrative groups need this, need this, need this. There's no question that it's harder and harder and harder to hire teachers, especially in the rural districts where starting pay is somewhere sometimes around $39,000 a year and average student loan payments are between $300 and $450 a month. There's no question that that's a crisis. The question is, does this body or legislator respond to that crisis by saying, let's just make it easier to hire anybody, or let's address the reason that one out of three teachers leaves this profession in the first 5 years. One out of every three teachers leaves this profession. It's been called an exodus. It's a higher teaching attrition rate than we have in any other like field. And if we want to drill down into the details, we can find out that teachers of color are actually leaving at a rate 24% higher than our white teachers. And if we want to drill down into why that is and address that problem honestly, I would think administrative groups and teacher groups and legislative groups would all want to dig into that seriously and look at what's happened with teacher pay relative to student loan debt. What's happened with the, what happens when you increase student class load but you don't, what you have the worst counselor to student ratio in the country? What happens when you have mental health needs that are unmet? And the other reason I'd say, the other reason I'd say as to why we act now, as we haven't even given it a chance to get going, is this. 60 years of academic peer-reviewed research will show you that teachers who've had robust training in both content and pedagogy lead to higher academic outcomes. Why are we waiting to see if Minnesota's going to buck that trend? I dropped my son off for high school last year, and I was dressed up, and he said, 2 years ago, why are you dressed up? He said, I have to testify before the legislature. So what are you going to say? I said, you won't believe me. I said, no, tell me, what are you going to say? I'm going to say that your physics teacher ought to know physics. And he got out of the car and he laughed at me. He said, you're just kidding. And I cried. And drove here to testify that physics teachers ought to know physics. There is a larger context here. Teachers are leaving the field at a rate called an exodus, and we ought to be dealing with those particulars. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Representative Bennett, quick follow-up, then I have three more member questions, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'd just like to restate my question because I don't think I have an answer for that. But my question is, with our community experts that have been around for many, many years, is there a widespread issue of a lack of effectiveness? I understand these people come in with qualifications that we wouldn't perhaps want, but are there lower test scores? Are there widespread complaints from parents after the fact that their child's not getting an appropriate education from these community experts?
Ms. Ford, again, or Representative Kunesh-Podein, and then I want to just make sure we have three more, or Mr. Luizzi is now joining us as well. And otherwise, we have three more member questions.
In Minnesota, I'm not aware of peer-reviewed research on the community expert versus fully prepared teacher, but nationwide, we have 60 years of that research to show that students who are taught by educators either teaching outside of the field for which they were trained or teaching without training altogether have lower academic achievement than the students who are taught by teachers with robust training in both content and pedagogy.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for all the testifiers being here today, and it's been good to hear all about it. Fundamentally, schools are about training and knowledge, so it just makes sense that our teachers would have the best education about teaching that we could give them and make sure that when I send my kids to school or other neighbors of mine, you know, they assume that the teachers are trained how to teach. So it seems like a fundamental. I am interested in a lot about the Tier 1 license, which has been talked about a lot, and the difficulty that may present for some people. But I just wanted to clarify that it says in here the Tier 1 license must not be renewed more than one time unless, and then there are ways that the teacher can be working toward that, whether it's cultural competency or beginning work on becoming a teacher, or the charter or district can show good cause.
Mr. Luizzi, that sounds like a question for you. Oh,
which opens up a whole range, and I just wonder about, you know, we heard about schools that have difficulty finding people. Maybe they rely on the community expert, which seems like a legitimate and bona fide way to solve that over a period of time. But ultimately, we want people who want to be in the profession teaching and moving forward to get the education they need. But I just wanted you to talk about show good cause, what other options that could be, and elaborate just a little bit, and then I have a follow-up too.
Okay, Mr. Luizzi, quickly, please.
Madam Chair, Representative, all quickly. So, first of all, PELSBY sees itself as a resource. We do the work of teacher licensure every day. We heard some inaccurate statements today, and I welcome anyone who has questions about accessing the tiered licensure system to call me. We act as a resource for everybody, and that includes legislators. So good cause is similar to the non-licensed community expert that was there before. So non-licensed community expert, all of those had to go before board review. Tier 1 breaks it up a bit where some of them, if you do not have a licensed teacher apply, you don't have to go before board review. But then good cause, which is in actually the current law as well, after 4 years, you would have to evidence good cause. We just finished rulemaking that identified some key areas there where a district could say, this person does not speak the language of the class, so this is a good cause for us not to hire the licensed teacher, but hire this tier one individual as well. So it provides the board an ability to review those applications on a case-by-case basis. And just statistically for you, the amount of tier one issue licenses that the board has looked at so far is over 1,300. The board has denied 6. So less than 0.5% denial when we see those good cause. And of those 6, most of them were in related services. So a school psychologist that had no school psychology training.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Bierman, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the real question that I also had was in, well, I have a bunch of questions, but I know we're short of time, so I'll pick a different one. Can you tell me about the statewide outlines for mentorship in our schools? Are those are there statewide guidance, or is that by the local district as far as the mentorship part of this equation?
Mr. Luizzi, or yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Ertl might actually be a good one to speak to this as well. He has the mentorship bill. So what I can speak to is Tier 1. For Tier 1, the current statute says that Tier 1 individuals must complete mentorship. So the board in rulemaking laid out a criteria for what that mentorship looked like, and we worked with stakeholders to make sure that it wasn't so robust that districts that did not have funding for mentorship would still be able to access it, but more robust than just, hey, there's a teacher down the hallway. For the other tiers, mentorship is more aligned to statutes outside of the board's purview.
One tiny quick follow-up.
Otherwise, Mr. Leeds is here to answer questions later.
Okay, I can wait.
Okay. I'm sure he would be more than happy to come and talk about your licensing. I know I've had to rely on him, too, to understand it. It's got a whole flow chart. Representative Wazlewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, the community expert piece that you're talking about, is that in terms of what subjects? Was that all subjects could be a community expert? And then is that the same with the change that was made to this Tier 1?
Mr. Luizzi.
Madam Chair, Representative. So non-licensed community expert by its term was really intended to be an expert in the field that maybe didn't have teacher prep, but you wanted that expert. Tier 1 license has sort of combined that idea of a community expert, which is for any licensure field, with an emergency license. The non-licensed community expert ended up becoming like an emergency license, so the transition was a good transition, but I think you heard from testifiers today this confusion with how to look at a Tier 1. Is it an emergency license where we're trying to get someone into that classroom and then move them up the tiers, or does it fit like the St. Paul Performing Arts testify? Does it really fit that model of a community expert that should stay on that Tier 1 for additional time? And we think the good cause exemption, both in current statute and then remains in 1329, allows the board to be able to review that and say, oh, yes, this is the 0.02 at the performing arts. You can keep your Tier 1 for multiple years because it doesn't make sense for you to move up. Really keep that community expert aspect of Tier 1.
Thank you, Representative Wazlewick, for the question, and Mr. Delizzi. And then we have final batter up, Representative Hewitt, and then we're going to be moving on because property taxes needs to get into this room.
I'm on that committee. We're cool. Madam Chair, real quick, a statement here made by Mr. Strum, and not because he's from my district, but I love the statement. We hold our students at a high standard, and our ACT scores speak for themselves. So one of my questions is, Mr. Harris, Mr. Lewis, and our police officer, and I forgot your name, does this bill permit prohibit, I'm on the bill and I just want to make sure I didn't read it wrong, author, that does this prohibit us from hiring teachers like them?
Representative Kishpadina, Mr. Luizzi.
I would like Mr. Luizzi to explain. He's much more eloquent at this.
Eloquent. I just wait for the next committee, apparently. Madam Chair, Representative, no, it does not. In fact, the only changes go from a four-year until you have to ask for good cause to a two-year for a Tier 1. And I also heard some a comment that I would like to clarify as well, that CTE does not allow for portfolio. The licensure via portfolio process is the process to allow an individual who may not have access to traditional or even alternative teacher preparation to receive a Tier 3 license by evidence meeting standards. That is open to CTE. In fact, we even made it a little bit easier for CTE folks to get a licensed review portfolio by using their work experience to evidence one aspect of the portfolio. So there are pathways for all of those individuals, not only to stay on a Tier 1 beyond additional years, but to move up to full teacher licensure in a Tier 3.
Madam Chair, quick follow-up. And so this, again, I read the bill right then when I signed on. Does this bill any way harm our out-of-state recruitment that we're doing right now, Madam Chair?
Representative Kunshpadin or Ms. Lazy?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, not at all. So when the first-tier licensure bill passed 2 years ago, that did change our ability to recruit from out-of-state because Tier 3, while it streamlined the preparation from out-of-state to be able to enter at a Tier 3, it added the requirement for content and pedagogy to start on a Tier 3. Our licensure laws before allowed us to give them a one-year standard license to get people from out of state into Minnesota on a standard license and then take the test. So that doesn't change, but actually nothing beyond that initial piece, nothing in 1329 limits out-of-state teachers from coming here.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, sorry, I hadn't seen you raise your hand again. So final word, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that House File 1329 is an insult to all the work that was done. You heard MSBA refer to all the time that was spent on designing this, and we need to give it a chance to work. We raised the standards. Tier 1 was a community expert previously, did not necessarily have to have a BA degree. And then we added the cultural competency, we added the content test. We did numerous things to elevate Tier 1 so that it could be looked at as a real teaching license. So what I would say is that if we're losing teachers, maybe we need to focus on teacher preparation programs and their inability to address the needs of our teacher candidates, and maybe they would proceed to stay in the profession. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And final one-minute word, Representative Kunesh-Pudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that this is a work in progress. I feel like these changes are definitely a step in the right direction. And I wouldn't put the blame on our teacher preparation colleges and universities and organizations. I would look to ways to enhance the profession of education and let our teachers know that they are appreciated, that they are respected, that we are fully funding the education that we demand for our students as legislators, and that we stop playing this game of blaming the teacher for all of the ills that our schools are going through. So at this time, I would ask you to support and pass this Bill 1329 on for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Pudin renews your motion to have House File 1329 be laid over. Two quick requests. Please, members, make it fast for the pages by removing your green jackets from the paper and separating them. And second, if there's conversations to be had, please have them out in the hallway because property taxes really needs to get started. They have a full agenda, too. With that, we're adjourned.